Nathan. And now,
I would like to introduce our main speaker for the evening, Richard.
I'm Richard. I'm an alcoholic. And not sure where we're going to go, but let's see where we go. Like I said, depends on where Richard shows up, huh? You know, many years ago, it used to be really called raw. You know? And I don't know, sometimes when I'm touched and I see the disease, you know, affecting somebody or people in the wrong way, I might get touched, that nerve hits, and you know, I want to make sure or say something that would make them see the light to maybe grasp this thing or even pursue it, you know. And then there's times that I'm feeling kind of at peace, man, and you know, those times are rare, so I just try to enjoy them while they were coming through through my path, you know. And you know what, I have been told that, you know, they like to hear me speak because it's never the same twice. I go to conventions, I've spoken at conventions, schools, countless meetings, been to meetings all over the United States because of work, and I've seen good, strong fellowships, and I've seen some not so strong fellowships, but you know, they exist because, you know, at least two alcoholics have come together and pursued the AA way, and therefore God is present, you know, and that's really all it takes. You know, Friday was June 10th. That was the anniversary for Alcoholics Anonymous. I think it was 80 years old. And it's amazing that two men, the fellowship of two men, came together by the grace of God that never knew, never even thought, never even seen each other, come together, and from that sparked what you see today. I come in to Alcoholics Anonymous through my drug use. Explain a little bit more in detail as I share, but drinking has been my greatest fear. I haven't drank. August 2nd will be 33 years that I haven't drank. That's not my sobriety date. My sobriety date is when I got abstinent from all things, everything, street drugs, alcohol. And like you may have heard or may not have heard, if you're new, I want to let you know, because I know the alcoholic mind and I know the scandalous thinking that we can come up with, and you know, if you're not clean, you're not sober. And if you're not sober, you're not clean. Now I'm going to tell you something. I'm very involved with another 12-step fellowship, but I'm a stickler on the traditions. My story has some drug use in it, but I try to minimize that, if at all, try to eliminate it or express it in a way where it doesn't break the traditions. I'm a true stickler on that. And those who are coming in, you know, what's the big deal? There's a huge big deal. There's a huge big deal. Alcoholics has been most effective towards alcoholism than any religion, any hospital, any program throughout the world of mankind. Period. And it's because we focus primarily on alcoholism. Now, you're not that important that we change that. And if that bothers you, I don't really care. I really don't. Because see, for me, now others might be loving that more than I, but I'm all for sacrificing one for the saving the group. And I believe you need to think like that with me, even with me. It's very important that we abide by the traditions. I remember my sponsor, Man, I told my sponsor all kinds of things, man. Scandalous, low-life shit, right? Not once did he ever wince at me, you know? Not once did I ever walk away feeling judged. And one time I came to him and I was starting this thing up, and he was saying, well, that's breaking the tradition. And I said, well, so what? It's all for the good. Oh, dude. He turned around and unleashed on, lashed his ass. He lashed on me, man. And I was like, you know, like, whoa, easy, dude. You know, but I understand today, see? Because if you compromise the traditions, then you compromise AA as a whole. And if AA as a whole has no place to be, then the individual will have no place to go. And we will all surely perish. It's very important to understand that. It's a bigger picture than what you may be able to see right now. And with that, you know, I don't have a tie, because I was told this morning. and I really wanted not to commit to this, because I wanted to do what I wanted to do. But to be honest with you, I didn't have any reason or any excuse that I couldn't do this. So I couldn't say no. So here I am. So it's not something that I really want to do, but I've spoken not when I wanted to, but when I've not wanted to. Not when things are great, but when things aren't great. When I'm going through a divorce, a loss of job, financial things, and I'm asked to share, I share. I don't say, I'm a little drained today. I'm a little flustered. I don't think I can. Shut the fuck up and get over here, man. Share. You know, that's what I was taught, man. I had Al is my sponsor. Al has been my sponsor since the beginning this time. I've been coming around here for 33 years. October 6, 1987 is my sobriety date, my recovery date. That's the date that I count. Okay. But now August 2nd is very significant, though. Let me tell you that. See, because when I stopped drinking, I stopped going to jail. See, and I'm going to tell you why I didn't drink prior to that point. I had been in and out of jail, in and out of jail. I had created so much harm, so much chaos within my circle. Anybody that came within my path suffered. Everybody. And most importantly, my family. And I was so sick of saying, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. You know what, man? I'm not exaggerating. I am not trying to be funny. This is a true story. When I heard the word sorry, it cringed my fucking stomach, man. I hated the word sorry. And fuck your promise. Sorry cringed my stomach. It was pathetic. Because I'm always sorry for something. Hated that word. So when the last time when I went to jail, I'm sitting there 23 years old and I'm thinking, damn, 23 years old, man, I'm down 3.5 years now. What happened, man? Where did I turn wrong, man? What happened? And when I used to go to jail, and I was at my lowest, it was my mother's words that used to get me through. Because my mother would always hear, I would always hear my mother say, you know you're better than that. And I used to think that I did. But man, I was ending up in these situations that were, oh, fuck. What happened? So the last time I was in, all the guys were like, hey, Holmes, when we get out, we drink a six pack. And I said, you know what, man, I might smoke a joint with you, but I'm not going to drink no more. And everybody's like, yeah, right, fuck your bitch, you know. But you know, when I was sitting there, I was laying there in jail, and you know how you got the bandana, because you know you got that 24-hour light on. And I was thinking of all the excuses that I used to give myself for drinking, you know, because it's Christmas, Thanksgiving. Because it's 4th of July. I was locked up for 3 4th of Julys in a row, man. When it started to turn 4th of July, I wanted to go inside and hide because I knew it was going to be a bad day. Started, you know, because it's hot, because it's cold, because I'm not working, because I ain't seen homeboy in a day, ain't seen my brother in a half a day, because. And then, you know, I thought about, you know, New Year's Eve, man, and I remember this picture in my mind where I used to look at this picture and I used to see my grandma, and my grandma's face was like sad. And I said, you know, no, man, not even for New Year's Eve. I'm not gonna drink no more. If I don't have one, I won't have two. If I don't have two, I ain't gonna get drunk. Because if I have one, I'm gonna have two. And when I got locked up the last time, I was fighting a 2-year suspended sentence to go to the joint. The judge got in a big argument in front of the courthouse in front of me, and I'm like, dumb fuck, you know, I don't know what's going on, you know, I can just see them arguing back and forth. The DA and the probation department wanted to give me 2 years. I already had a 2-year suspended sentence on me. And the judge yelled at him, he said, sit down. I've seen cases like this before, and I'm not going to do it. Now sit down. And then he turned to me. And then he just blew my ass, man. And you ever could hear everybody in the back that, ooh. I was like, oh. But he told me, he says, you know, young man, I'm going to tell you. They want to give you these 2 years. I'm going to give you a break. I'm going to give you 6 months to think about your life. Do you understand where you're headed? You're headed straight for the gutter, young man. Do you understand? Do you see that? So I'm going to give you 6 months. And if you come back again, you will come before me. And you will do those 2 years plus. You understand? Okay. So I got sent in the back, and again, like I was thinking, you know, man, it's been 3.5 years, man. I'm only 23. Man, I swear I would never be like my dad. My dad was in and out of prison all my life. I'm following his steps foot for foot. I remember one time when I got a letter from my dad from the joint. I was locked up in youth authority for two counts of armed robbery. And he said, oh, like father, like son, huh? And everybody kind of laughed. And you know what? I was embarrassed. It wasn't funny. And I thought about it, and it hit home. So I got out, man, and everybody was telling me what an asshole I was, and da-da-da, and, you know, and finally I said, you know, I told my mother, I said, you know, Mom, I'm tired of saying sorry. I'm going to show you I'm sorry. I'm going to show you about not drinking no more. If I ever drink again, then you know I know I wasn't sorry. But I'm not going to drink no more. I'm going to show you I'm sorry because I'm tired of that word. I don't want to say that word. I don't want to even hear that word. I never drank again. I haven't drank again, rather. But I continued with the drugs. And cocaine almost killed me, wiped the walls with me. And I went to rehab. And when I went to rehab, they said, Mr. Guzman, have you done anything? And I said, yeah, I smoked a joint to get here. So they said, well, you know, Mr. Guzman, you're going to have to stop everything. I said, hey, I'm not here for weed. I'm here for fucking cocaine. Now, can you help me or you can't? Let me know. I'll get the fuck out of here right now. I remember the nurse just shaking her head. She said, son, here, Mr. Good. And to tell you the truth, when I woke up one morning, one of the most humiliating moments in my life was I had tracks from my fingertips to my shoulders, man. And I couldn't even hide it from my wife no more. It was humiliating because she thought this strong man was just this poo butt cump low life junkie now. And So I was no longer looking for counseling. I was looking for a hospital, right? Live and stay and shit, right? So I called this place called Pinecrest in Dallas, and I'm talking to them, and they go, And I said, well, hey, man, how much this gonna cost? They said, $12,500. I said, whoa. I said, shit, fuck that. I'm gonna have to kick this shit on my own. And I went to hang up, and I could hear that little boy, whoa. What? So you got insurance? Yeah, you got insurance. So that's how I was able to get down into rehab. They wanted me to stay 28 days. They told me 28 days. So I said, okay. Well, I went in there, and the second day I had a big old bag of weed, and I stuffed it in the TV, right? And I was out there jogging and shit, working out, you know, and going to those therapy groups and telling them what's what, you know, and what a lot. So I get out, they tell me, hey, Mr. Goodman, we want you to stay longer than 28 days. I said, hey, don't meet 28 motherfucking days, man. I got a life to live, I got bills to pay, I got family support. I'm out of here, man. I'm out of here. 28 days is what you told me. It's all right, Mr. Goodman, sign in. And 2.5 weeks later, like McGill Gorilla, coming back, my lip, kicking my lip, suitcases in hand, walking through the doors to come back in for a relapse, right? And then, after 2.5 weeks, they told me I had to leave because of insurance, and I didn't want to leave. I was scared. And that time, I remember a guy came, and he says, hey, you want something? I said, you know, Garrett, I'm going to do it a little different this time. I'm going to do it like they said. And I couldn't get 30 days. I got released, I couldn't get 30 days. The first time I couldn't get 30 days. And what they did is they took me to Alcoholics Anonymous. They were like, hurt, you know, they hurdle us over there, you know, and I'm Richard, and I'm a alcoholic, you know, tongue twisted. And then, so anyway, I couldn't get it. So I was in and out for 5 years. I couldn't get this thing. And then the last time, October 6th is my date. I've been able to stay by the grace of God. And I said in the morning meeting this morning, tomorrow night, I said, if God be willing, I'll make it to this, I'll have this. I said, no. It's God's will. God's will is for you to be sober. God's will is that you believe that you're deserving of this sobriety. God's will is that you have an answer for your problem. All you got to do is look next to you. That's the answer to your problem. Alcoholics Anonymous. How to stay here is through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. How to be a team player. I say that because I'm still have a problem. I've never been one to play well with others. 12 traditions. I remember I had 2.5 years sober. Somebody suggested I pour coffee. I almost whipped his ass. How dare you tell me that? Because I had issues with the color of my skin. Tell me to pour coffee. I pour that fucking coffee, you better not drink that motherfucker. But I went to a Sunday morning meeting, man, and I was sitting down, right? And I looked over at that coffee. I said, come on, God. Looked over at that coffee. Come on, man. How willing are you? Come on, God, not now. So I get up, right? I get that coffee, man. My back's turned to the crowd, right? So I get the coffee. I say, man, I swear to God, if anybody make fun of me, I'm going to kick their ass. So I get the cup. And I turn around and I start to pour coffee, right? I pour sobriety like 2.5 years, man, and I got good at it, man. I was shit. I just fucking work at McClintock. And then I remember when I first saw somebody get up and they got themselves a cup of coffee and they walked away. I said, "You selfish bastard." And then, you know, when I got here too, I wasn't too keen on helping anybody. I wasn't really interested in steps. I wasn't interested in being a service, and you know, I wasn't really here for all that. You know, I just knew there was something here. And I used to come in and these people would say, "Hey, Richard, hi, Richard." And there was this one guy, his name was Don. His Dorothy, Dorothy's husband. Dorothy died with, like, I think 60 plus years, something like that. But her husband used to come talk to me, and I was like, "Dude, what does white motherfucker want with me?" And I was baffled, man. And he would always come, "Hey, Richard," you know. I'm like, "Dude, you know, what's up with you, man?" See, I couldn't handle any kind of kindness, man. It would just baffle me. It would throw me off, right? Now, resentment, hey, I can roll with that one. I know that. You know, the go in the gut, yeah. Hey, shit, you want to go first? You want me to go first? I know it down there. But kindness, love, oh, man, you're not playing fair. You're throwing me off here. I don't know. I don't know how to react to that, you know. There's a lot of people, man. And one time I remember when I came to a meeting one time, and I've been here for years, and I walked catty corner from the door, and I had my coffee, and I was like, "Richard, hi." "Hi." "Richard." "Hi." "Hey, Rich, hi." "Hi." And then I got to the other corner, I was like, "Damn, I know a lot of people in here." And I was like, "Whoa." But in the beginning, I didn't have nobody coming up to me and offering me their number. I didn't. I wasn't approachable. There wasn't nobody that could handle me then. I was so full of hate, not just anger, hate. And all I knew was that, you know what, man, I was in this pain and somebody got to pay for this shit. And it was going to be anybody that came in contact with me. It didn't matter who. You know, my views and my relationship with women was not good. Women, you know, not respectful. Found out through some therapy and through steps that, you know what, man, I had a lot of anger towards my mother that I had to resolve. I had to get some clarity. And I got it. You know, I remember one time I was with this therapist and she was telling me, "Richard, do you know what intimacy is?" And I said, "Well, yeah." She goes, "Well, what is it?" And I was like, "Well, you know." "So no, what is it?" And I was like, "Well, you know. She goes, "No, I don't know. What is it?" And I'm thinking in my mind, man, this bitch ain't letting me off the hook, right? She's throwing me back in the corner. And I'm like, "Oh, man." So she goes, "What is it?" "You know, it's like when you and your lady getting it." I still can see that stupid look on her face. I got some work here, boy. I still remember how she looked at me, man. It was like... said, no, Richard. It's about allowing yourself to be vulnerable with another. To allow yourself to be seen as you are for who you are. I didn't understand that. I see today, the more I'm aware of my vulnerabilities and the more I show my vulnerabilities, the more I become aware of my vulnerabilities, I don't get weaker. I become stronger. through the 12 steps that has allowed me to look within, to see who I am, to admit what I am, to understand my limits, and that it is okay that I am who I am. What you see before you is who you see, and what you see is what it is. I try to give everybody and anybody respect. I'm a stickler on that. No matter who you are, I honor and give you your space. You deserve it. Women, I deserve anything and everything as equal as a man. I believe that strongly today. What helped me change that too is I have two daughters. When my daughters was born, my first one, I remember sitting in the hospital thinking, I was so scared, man. And this lady said, it's okay to have girls. And I remember thinking, what am I going to do? What am I going to show this little girl? I'm a jailbird junkie, man. What can I teach her? I know the pain I'm feeling. I know the pain and the hatred that I grew up with. I don't want to bestow this on any child, especially my child. What am I going to do? In my twisted way of thinking, I thought that if I had a man, a boy, that I had a 50-50 chance. I was so tweaked out, twisted back then, I would have ruined that boy. My daughters opened my heart to where I had a desire to try to do better. They touched me like nothing else had ever touched me. Why that is so important, when I was 16, my father got busted for murder. When he got busted for murder, I was baffled, I was puzzled, and I was lost, and I was hurt, and I was scared. All I ever wanted to do was be with my father, and my father got busted for murder, and I remember standing there when I heard the words, and I was like, what did I do? What did I do to deserve this? Why would God do that to me? How could God allow this to happen? And then the anger kicked in and I said, you know, if there's a God, fuck him. I don't want nothing to do with him. Fuck him. And I lived my life like that for years. Fuck you, God. And I'm going to tell you, life got dark. Life got real dark. And I see today, because of that, and I'll explain a little bit to you right now, God is doing with me today to prepare me for tomorrow. Years later, I'm in recovery. I got 2.5 years sober. I'm working in the garage, and I come out, and all of a sudden this thought comes, if God took your dad away from me today, would you turn your back on him? Should you not? Years of memories flashed through. When I was angry, and just my children, my sobriety, it all just whew. And I said, whoa, no. Oh, hell no. Oh, no, not today. No, shit, no. And then I thought, I stepped back and I said, where the hell did that come from? And then I just went back to work. Well, the next day, I was doing the fifth step of all the secret stuff, the deep, deep secret stuff. And I got a phone call. And the phone call was that my dad had been shot and killed the day before. I went in outside and I told Robert, I have another sponsor, he's a backup sponsor. Al was having problems with his wife dying of cancer. I used Robert, and he kind of used them both. But I told Robert, I said, hey man, my father just told me my father was killed. And Robert goes, you want to put this off? And I was like, can't, man. I got to work this program. If I don't work this program, I ain't got nothing.
I got to work this pub now. No. So we sat down and finished the fifth. That's how diligent I must work this program. Because I know the disease is alive and well, just waiting for that moment, that second, or that hairline crack to penetrate, to get in, just consume my mind, and turn everything I believe around, and make me even justify that I'm right in doing, in drinking, in feeding my disease. The spirituality that this program has to offer, I remember when I heard a tape Chuck C say that 3% will be the only people, about 3% of all people that walk through the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous will truly grasp the spiritual aspect that this program is really truly all about. I know what he means. And you know what? I'm a lot street. I have a lot of street ways. But my heart is in line with God. Well, however you perceive me is how you perceive me. I can't. That's your deal. I'm not going to try to perceive a way to your liking. This is who I am. But I'm going to tell you what, man. I worked hard to get where I'm at. I worked hard to earn what I have. I work for the second largest petroleum corporation in the world. I'm an inspector for a refinery. I worked hard to get there. I have a damn good job. I didn't get here because I have an education. I didn't get here because I have wealth. I've worked and earned every bit of everything that I've gotten. Everything. And I know how to talk in the corporate world. I know my audience. I know I can talk to a jailbird. I know I can talk to a gutter rat. And I can talk to somebody of education without feeling intimidated. This is who I am. Whether you like it or not. I'm a straight shooter. I've always been that. And I believe I get a lot of respect because I am a straight shooter. I don't lie. I don't cope. I just say what it is. I say what it is because the consequences that will happen in my life if I drink or use are enormous. I come from a very violent background. My father, last time I talked to my father, he knew what was happening. Well, the last time I got to see my father was in his coffin. Shot and died behind drug sales. When I was 9, my grandfather, the last time we got together was at his funeral, behind being stabbed at a church hall, drunken brawl. My uncle, that got busted with my dad for murder, taught me how to ride a bike, how to fight. I used to box, had boxing matches on the corner. Stabbed 18 times in the back. My brother shot in the head. My sister shot because of a drug deal in front of her nine-year-old son. And some of you know my brother Bobby, had 10 and a half years in here. Been a great help. Much service in here. Went out behind medication, was never able to come out back. Went off and the cops shot him 8 times. That one hurt. That motherfucker hurt. That one hurt, man. I understand the disease of alcoholism. I know what it can do. On the flip side, I tell you, it's a different world in recovery. It's a big difference being in, wrapped in the disease and wrapped in recovery. I know what you might have done out there, but in the spiritual world, logic means nothing. If it did, we all wouldn't be here. We'd be dust. Alcoholics Anonymous has shown me and given me everything. Everything. I come in here and I connect with you. 27 and a half years sober. Look at where I'm at. I'm in a room of Alcoholics Anonymous. Why? Because I need you. I'm humble enough to say I need you. I believe I've been able to stay here long enough because I've been humble enough to a degree to stay here.
No matter how good my life has become, I still need you. I still follow you. And I state what my thoughts are in a meeting, in a business meeting, but whatever the group conscience decides, that's what I support, whether I like it or not. Acceptance, it was really an awakening for me to realize that acceptance wasn't something that I needed to like. It was confusing. In my first 3 years, everything I prayed for, I got. Everything I prayed for in my first 3 years, I got. And then God said no. My third year, God said no. And God said, we're going to introduce you to you, Richard. We're going to start looking at you, Richard. We're going to see what makes you tick, Richard. Let's see what kind of flaws you have, Richard. Let's uncover that pain, Richard. Let's go back and see how well you think you are, Richard. When I had 2.5 years, man, I was at the podium in 1600 Club. A woman was talking about emotions. I had no clue what the hell she was talking about. 31 years old, I don't know what emotions are. I'm looking baffled, man. I mean, that jail. I say, yeah, what the hell is she talking about? Emotions, man. What is this? Is that like feelings? And he goes, yes. You're about to get in touch with yours. It threw me over my head. Didn't understand what he's talking about. When I had 4.5 years sober, Gussie. I used to hate Gussie. I hated Gussie. And she knew it. It was no secret. She knew it. And I was on a ski trip, and I bumped into her app at Midway, and I was like, oh, man. Of all people, it's just me and her. And I look at Gussie, and I said, Gussie, I got a question for you. And she goes, yes. I said, you know, Gussie, you're always talking about spirituality, and you're always talking about feelings and emotions and stuff. I said, you know, Gussie, I hear you. And I hear what they're saying, and I understand what they're saying. But you know, Gussie, I ain't never felt like that. And I'm starting to wonder, Gussie, if I'm truly a child of God. I started going through this mind fuck. I really started thinking and believing, because of my religious beliefs, because of my beliefs as a child, that maybe I'm not a child of God. I'm not a child of God, then that means I might be going out pretty soon. God, I don't want to go out, man. I can't go through it again. I won't live through it. She came back and said, you know, Richard, I've watched you for many, many years. And any time that somebody has touched you, you slam the door shut on them. And I had to realize that, you know what? I come to realize that love was the thing that I wanted, but yet I was scared of. When I had it, I sabotaged it. When it got touched to me, I ruined it. And that's why I always say, the 12 steps will help you get right with you. And unless you're right with you, anything good that comes to you will be like water in your hands. It'll ooze out. You won't keep it. That's why it's so important to get right with yourself. I seen a guy today, he talked about how it's not about you working on you, it's about giving and giving. So I went to talk to him, and he goes, well, you know, man, I'm just doing a sponsor, a direction I'm not sponsored. You know what I told him? All right, have a good day. I'm not the kind of guy that will preach to you. I'm not the kind of guy that will make you do. You come ask me to be your sponsor, I'll sponsor you because I'm responsible. But I don't hound you down. You want to work this thing? Then you put me to work because I'm responsible. But if you don't, cool. I got things to do. My life is full, man. My life is very, very busy. Very, very busy. I got a lot to do. You work this program, you reach out to me, I'm responsible. But if you got too much to do, cool. All right. Let me know when you're ready. I will never, ever prevent my sponsees from working the staff. Well, that's how I learned, by working the steps. The steps are the key to looking at you so that you can be utilized as an instrument of the Spirit to reach many others. That's how this thing works. One alcoholic helping another alcoholic. That's how it works. There's nobody to know us better than us. And like I said, if you really want to know the answers to your problems, all you have to do is look next to you. That fellow alcoholic will help you move forward. The program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I believe, is truly what I believe is all about, is about one alcoholic helping another. When one alcoholic is in so much pain that that alcoholic cannot move, it's petrified, or she's petrified by her fears, that fellow alcoholic will help you find enough hope just to take a step. That's what it's all about. I've been through a lot of 12 steps calls, helped a lot of people, and nobody has helped me more than them. There's a lot of people that in the past, Carl Castleberry, Roger Chalet, you know, Gordon, Dwight, he used to always say, "I don't care what you are. I just want to tell you I love you." He was 70-something years old. Jeanette. That lady was 82 years old, jammed down the street at 85, easy, man. Dorothy. And Don. Don, I used to tell her, why did he like me so much? He was always intrigued by your welding. Okay. He liked me, man, and I just couldn't get over it, right? There's so many people that have been an instrument to my sobriety. When years ago when the 1600 Club used to be open 24/7, I used to sit there 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. This is where how it started. Smokey and Hank. Smokey was one man that I don't ever recall anybody ever saying one bad thing about. Good, good man. These old timers accepted us as we were, for who we were. Dave Jones. One time, Dave Jones, I was doing my four step, and I got to a point in my life, in my four step, and I got it, and I crumbled it all up. And I said, "I'm not doing it right." And I went to throw it away, I went to burn it. And then something told me, wait. So I waited, and I went to the club, and I went to talk to Dave Jones. And I said, "Hey, Dave, you got a minute?" He goes, "Yeah." I said, "Hey, man, I'm having problems with my fourth, man. How'd you do yours?" And Dave smoked a lot back, and he had this huge nose, too, right? And you can hear him smacking when he chews his gum. And he says, "You know, Richard, I just did a kind of biography style and said this, said that, and does. But you know, when I got to this one part of my life, I stopped because I felt like I wasn't doing it right." And he told me what the secret was. His biggest secret in his life was my biggest secret in my life. 30 years apart. If that ain't God talking to you, brother, you don't want to see. I went back home, straightened them papers out, wrote a little bit, put it away, continued. Al says, doesn't care how much time you got. If you haven't done a four step, you're still a newcomer. I understand that. Me?
I consider you a newcomer until you get a year. I know that might piss you off, so what? Come back and get the fucking year and then you come talk to me. Because you'll see the difference.
60 days, I welcome all the newcomers. Man, shut up.
Newcomer said, did I sound kind of dumb?
Yeah.
It's okay. It's okay. It's okay to be not okay. Okay? It will help you get to being okay. We'll help you love yourself until you can love yourself. I remember Daryl was the one. I'm going to tell a quick story. Daryl, you came to me with this problem, right? This is when the meeting was in here many years ago. I came in here and I was looking for this guy, right? I was going to get this guy and I just started kicking his ass, right? And I was looking for him, man. I couldn't find him, right? And the more I looked for him, the more I couldn't find him, the madder I was getting, right? And Roger KC said, oh, hey, what are you doing? I said, I'm going to look for this motherfucker. I'm going to kick this fucking ass. And I'm looking. I said, hold on, man. Hold on. I said, yeah, I'm holding on right now. And he goes, hold on. And I couldn't find him. So I said, what? He goes, well, you think about writing about it? I said, write about what? So Roger said, let's go home and write about it. So I said, all right. So I went home to write about it because I was going to prove this sucker wrong, right? So I went home, I wrote about it, and I said, hey, Roger. I said, yeah. I said, I'm done. I said, done. I'm done. I said, well, I mean, I'm done. She said, all right, come on over. So I went over to his house, and I shared it with him, right? And after I shared it with him, I just like, whew, it all went away, right? So I'm walking out of the, down the driveway, and my wife says, what you doing? I said, man, fuck that. Yeah, I'm tired. I'm going home, right? Years later, Daryl comes to me about a problem with his ex-wife, and he goes, man, I'm going to go kill her. And I was like, oh, man. And I'm thinking, like, man, dude, God, what did I say here, man? Because I'm going to kill her too. I'm struggling. I said, God, help, give me some words. I say, hey, check this out, man. We got this fourth in here, man. Why don't we write about it and see what happens? So Daryl goes, all right. So Daryl goes and he writes, right? He goes, hey. I said, yeah? He goes, Daryl, hey, what's up? I'm done. You done? I'm done. All right, come on over. He comes over, man, and he's sharing it, right? I swear to God, I'm like, I see all the anger just like, I'm baffled, man. I'm like, damn, this shit fucking works. But I'm trying to hold my composure, right? Because I'm the sponsor, right? And I tell him, because I told him if he still felt like killing her out there, I'd give him a ride, right? So, I go, well, how do you feel, man?
fuck that bitch. I'm going home tired, man.
And, like, he thought I was, like, God for the next 3 years, right? And I let him think that, you know? I gotta wrap it up, man. You know what? I didn't plan on doing this. And like I say, I don't care if I do good. I don't care if I do bad. The main thing is I'd be willing to be willing, and I was willing to come and share with you. And I hope that I have touched somebody some way, because you know what? That's what it's really all about. And if you didn't get anything out of this, please keep coming back, because somebody here, in here, one of these meetings will touch you and will help you to get from where you are. They'll get you into the spirit. They'll get you where you have the spiritual awakening. And most important, they'll get you to the point of feeling worthy of, because you are. You are because you're sitting here. That's God working in your life, whether you believe it or not. That's God working in your life. Because you're here, God saw fit to spare you, to bless you, to give you a way out of where you're at, or to continue and to enhance your life. And by that, your loved ones, your friends, your employer will all truly benefit from the grace of God by touching you. I'm Richard G. I'm an alcoholic, and I want to thank you. Amen.
Thank you, Richard. And I've had the opportunity to hear you speak many times, and I'm touched every time. So let's give Richard another hand. Okay, and also let's give Mike another hand for his 10 minutes. And now I'm going to turn the meeting back over to Billy for our other deal that we can hear.
Thank you for letting me
get service. All right, Billy Alcoholic. Just a real short God story. I'm a night owl, and at 6:20 this morning, the phone rings, and I'm like, nah, look at it, it's Daryl. And Daryl got out of the plans for Daryl today. And then I got to the morning meeting, and I'm sitting right across. Richard's sitting right there, and I'm sitting right there, and it's like, God says to me, Billy, can you piece this together? And I'm standing here today because of countless times like that where God says, can you piece this together? For the newcomers here, I hope something that Richard shared helps you piece it together. And thank you, Mike, too. Okay, so let's get done. I want to thank our leader, Yvonne. We'll pass the basket. We'll get this going. And Joey, would you come on up and do the raffle?
Sure.
And if you got a raffle ticket, the winner gets your choice of the books on the table here. And so if you have a raffle ticket, get it handy. I think I will. Anyhow.
Yeah. Hey, I'm Joey. I'm an alcoholic. Okay, let's do this drawing thing here. See who wins some AA literature. Okay. The number I have is
4308988.
Oh, no. Is there anyone here that needs a big book? Don't be shy.
Any book.
Anybody?
Any book.
Okay. Kevin said yes.
I need a daily reflection, but I got a big book.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Right on. Congratulations. Thank you, Joey, for taking care of the raffle, and Mike is our chip person tonight. Come on up, Mike. And, yeah.
Thank you for letting me. Good job. Mike Alcoholic. Mike. Okay. Something to give out tips for the various continued sobriety. And does anybody have 30 days?
Yeah.